Welcome, welcome all to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast, the spooky edition, pre-Halloween, October 26th, a Tuesday, 2021. No, I'm not dressed up in the Link costume. I should have been. That's Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about lots of fun stuff. N64 expansion pack games are out on Switch Online, and boy, are people are super happy about that.
People are mild.
We'll dive into what exactly is in those Intellivision physical products. We'll dive into that. The news will shock you. We have a Patreon poll topic. We got voicemails. We'll go over paranormal stuff for Halloween. Ian, what'd you do this past weekend? Did you have fun?
Yeah, I went to my first concert since before COVID.
Oh.
On Friday, I went to the Casbah in San Diego.
You rocked the Casbah?
Yep. Treg got a hold of Vonnie and I earlier in the week and was like, hey, I've got extra tickets for this show. Do you want to go with Emily and I? And we were like, yeah. Because I love hanging out with Treg. It's fun. We haven't done that in a while.
Rare. So look at those fringe benefits from working at Luna still following through.
Oh, I got fucking hooked up. So I went in there yesterday to finally, I think I talked about the story a little bit. It was actually a mini Tales from the Game Store, I think, that I talked about on the first bonus podcast we did.
Oh!
I went and actually picked up my Lavender Hannah Montana PSP, and I'm just so excited. Finally got it.
Patreon.com/SCU Podcast.
That's right.
You listen all about that tale.
See what I do? I work it in. see how good I am? Anyways, yeah, I got hooked up on that. But yeah, so we went, and I didn't even know who the band was. It was some dark electronic act called Contravoid. It was extremely loud and good. It was wonderful. I had a wonderful time. And then went to Taco Fest on Saturday with Vonnie, our annual tradition. Ate a lot of tacos. Had an eggplant tofu taco that was just out of this world.
By the way, your bag's in the front there. You can leave there. I don't care. It's just
that's cool. Watched the Chihuahua Beauty Pageant.
Oh, really?
I love watching the Chihuahua
Beauty Pageant. I like Chihuahuas. They're usually quiet and cute.
This is what I was talking about. I was talking about with our friend Tom and with someone else.
Some people
recently
hate Chihuahuas. I think they're fine.
I grew up hating Chihuahuas. Hated them.
Okay. You had a hatred for Chihuahuas.
I just didn't like them at all growing up.
You're
Taco
Bell dog?
And then suddenly I met my friend's Chihuahua. It wasn't even a friend. It was an acquaintance. And me and that dog fucking bonded. Loved that dog. And then every Chihuahua I started to see, I was like, these are kind of cool dogs. I fucking love Chihuahuas. Love them. They're great.
I used to see people to swap me. They take them around little strollers, and they're just quiet dogs hanging out. Sometimes they're a little shaky. They're looking around. They're they're just minding their own business.
I think it's because I can.
They don't attack you.
I connect with Chihuahuas. I understand.
Shakiness?
I can be shaky and nervous too.
If you were talking to a Chihuahua,
if I was a dog, I'd probably be a Chihuahua.
That's why some dogs I like. Okay, I like. It's weird. I don't like the dogs in the middle. I like small dogs that mind their business like Chihuahuas, or big like Huskies and smart dogs that also mind their own business but are smart.
Right.
Everything else in the middle, the yappers, the toy dogs, don't like them. I'm very specific on my dogs. There's probably only a 1% chance I'll ever own a dog, but if I owned a dog, it would probably seem like a Chihuahua or like a Husky. I seem like they are similar intelligence, those two dogs, except one just minds their own business, the other one's like a worker, or like a lab or a golden retriever. You know, that's the only dogs I like, all three of those, or four. But this isn't about me, is it?
No.
Was there a taco du jour that day or no?
If I had to pick a number one taco, it was either the eggplant tofu one or the
eggplant tofu.
Yeah, it was eggplant and tofu. It was a vegan taco. It was an attempt at a vegan taco. Well, I say attempt because none of these actually taste very taco-y, but they're always very delicious. The Chicharrón's taco is good, though.
How does something taste taco-y?
It doesn't have the usual taco spices necessarily.
Oh.
That's
in the meat, you mean, or the taco sauce?
Yeah, the cumin and stuff like that. But the Chicharrón's taco was really good, too. Fried crispy pork skin.
Oh.
Yeah. Just crunchy and delicious.
Crunchy, not crunchy. Crunchy.
So, yeah, that was pretty much my weekend. Sunday, I played D&D. Sunday was when I threw my back out even worse. So, I'm just, I'm floating through life right now.
Chiro gun that, baby.
Yeah,
Chiro gun it.
Been doing.
Use Pat's gift.
Been doing.
I was at Metropalooza, first time in 3 years, Arlington, Texas. We talked about my experience at the great Twisted Root burger place on the exclusive Patreon podcast. But let's not bring it up until the end of the podcast. But it was great to come out there. I bought like a few computer games. I blanked out when you misfired that in my brain. I got the original hint book, the old OG hint books for King's Quest II when you use the marker. Those are probably hard to find. I had the marker still. And then I got the Leadership Larry.
Oh, you need the marker.
To undo it.
Yeah.
It's almost like magic marker or like disappearing ink stuff. And then I got the Leadership Larry original one, which was a little bit later, and it had the red see-through card thing, you know, the red line thing to look through.
Yeah.
But it was cool to find like the marker one. Those are probably not easy to find those anymore. So I got that.
So the marker is where you like scribble something on and then like the text appears.
It's literally like you go over the line.
Do you remember when they made like activity books that used to come with those markers?
I never had one, my parents didn't love me enough to get me that. Sorry.
I mean, they were cheap.
That makes it worse. Yes.
Like a dollar.
Yeah, yes. So it was an Etch-a-Sketch. I never had one. Etch-a-Sketch was like $5. Anyway, so it was a great time seeing everyone out there. I hung out with my pal, Pixel Dan, your pal, and Christina, his better half. And it was great to see people. It was funny. It was also like the combo books because Dan came out with this great Masters of the Universe toy guide, which is literally like the same dimensions of the NES and Super Nintendo books. It's actually a slightly thicker book, but I mean, you look at the threading's the same color. It might come from the same, you know, printing press somewhere in Asia. Who knows? And it was funny to see people walking around with those. He sold out of his books.
Oh, nice. It's a good book. I had a lot of fun reading through it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was good talking to Dan about, you know, just bonding over the heartache and troubles of putting these big gigantic books together. It's definitely an experience, and he's working on another book. He's working on another one. But yeah, they've been doing well. You saw my arcade stance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did see your arcade stance.
So that was at the little arcade section. Not too late, about 25, 30 games at Retropalooza. And there are people playing some Street Fighter Championship. I will say this before I get into it. I'm not making excuses for my performance. I did not have a bad performance. Mm. But it was not an original Street Fighter cabinet. Not only that, the button layouts were fucked. The buttons were not like next to each other. This is how big the space was between the buttons, Ian. You had to do that to hit all three buttons, which made combos and switching back and forth between like low and high punch really tough.
Far more difficult.
Yeah, because you couldn't just like... So not just that, the joysticks were like felt super tight. And I know Championship tightened up the controls in general, but like something seemed a little off. And it wasn't just me saying that. It was my opponents as well. Doesn't matter though. Pat went 7-1. 7 wins in a row. They lined up. They knocked them all down with Ryu. Finally, I lost to Blanka because I couldn't counter with I couldn't throw a Shoryuken to save my life to counter the jumping arm attack. It's not much you can do with that. You got to do a Shoryuken or hopefully get your uppercuts in, but you usually get hit. But no, it was fun. It was fun to defend my Street Fighter honor there. That was before we went to Twisted Root. No, it was a fun time. It was a fun time. Speaking of fun times, Ian, the Castlevania video with me and our pal Gerard, the completionist, is out. Came out this weekend. Ian already saw it. He loved it.
I watched it five or six times.
Five or six times? You put it on 2x speed and went through it five or six times?
One instance of it on each monitor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But no, it was a fun video. I mean, we did that video 9 years ago originally, the original one. So it was fun to revisit it and see how much my hair had evolved in 9 years, basically. That was short hair, Pat. That's how long ago it was.
Jeez.
That was BLH, before long hair. You can say that. Before curly hair. BC. Yeah, BC. BC, before curly hair.
Before curly.
Yeah, there you go. You see what Hasbro did over the weekend, Ian?
Yeah, they got into that NFT shit.
They were doing their Hasbro Pulse, which I guess is their online event. Pulse. To announce things. Pulse.
So, I'm...
Pulse.
I'm a little... My understanding of this is, and I'm not happy about this, my understanding is that they're selling NFTs and you have to have the NFT to even have a chance at getting one of their actual toys.
Well, okay.
They're launching its first Power Rangers NFT, which can be used to redeem a special edition of the Dino Megazord. Revealed Friday during Hasbro's PulseCon, the collection of Power Rangers NFTs will be available through Sunday, including digital artwork of a black and gold Dino Megazord and the individual Dino-themed Zords that make it up. Customers who purchase one can redeem it for a physical version of the Megazord called the Lightning Collection Zord Ascension Project Special Edition Dino Megazord.
Okay. So you buy the NFT, it's $200.
Yep.
But in theory, you trade that in for the toy.
Yes.
Yes. So you are trading it. It's a one-to-one. Like, it's not an opportunity.
Okay.
It's a trade-in, right? So my point, why is this better or necessary versus just a pre-order? Like, what's the difference? I mean, I guess you could trade ownership of this, but somehow, is that why? Or why the NFT?
No, it's literally at this point, I think it's the only way I think NFT is going to take off is if you attach it with something physical. I mean, that's the funny thing about this. Their NFT is supposed to be for digital art, but they're trying to get people into it by being like, but you also get the physical version of the Zord as well. It's ridiculous.
But this is basically a pre-order for the Lightning Collection.
It's a pre-order for it.
Lightning Collection Zord Ascension Project Special Edition Dino Megazord. Is that a joke? That name? Holy crap. It's like 17 names right there.
I think one of the other things they're doing is if you buy this, you can get the physical one, but it looks like you have to exchange the NFT for it. So there are definitely going to be people who I don't think are very smart.
That get two of them?
No, that buy it and don't... Well, either buy two of them or buy it and don't exchange it for the physical Zord because they want to see if the NFT ends up being worth something in the future.
And you only have 1 week to exchange it.
You have to think.
Yeah. Like, who's going to get this? I think this is going to go up, especially if there's no value after the 8th of November. You can't exchange it for anything.
I don't know. People who think NFTs inherently have value.
And Hasbro wins because then if they'll have extra stock laying around, they can still sell for $200 or... Right. No, I can't picture anyone that would actually spend $200 on this and not redeem it.
Someone's going to do it. Someone's going to do it, and they're going to think it's 4D chess.
4D chess.
Someone's going to do it, and they're going to think they're the fucking specialist person in the world.
What is that fourth dimension in 4D chess? I always wonder, what is that fourth dimension? Because time is not a dimension. I think that was been established. It's like the infinite space thing or like void space.
I mean, it's just a way to make something sound complicated.
That Twilight Zone episode?
Yeah.
Remember they go in the wall, the girl gets trapped in space, basically, in like the void?
Not exactly. I don't remember that.
You don't remember that episode? No. It's a great episode. Very experimental. By the way, Ian, going back real quick to Retropalooza, I have a present for you. Close your eyes. A present for you. Because you brought it up. Open your eyes. Someone was nice enough to give
you
that.
Oh, geez. My own personal can of crack. Thank you.
What is it, Ian, for the
audio audience? It's the Peach Rings G Fuel, the Sonic flavor. It's delicious. It's also far more caffeine than anyone should intake at one time.
Oh, that's too much caffeine?
So I will drink half of that and then drink the other half later.
Plug it with a cork to keep the carbonation. Yep. So I guess it could work. And then drink the rest later. Because what is that? Is that 12-ounce can?
300 milligrams per 16 fluid ounce.
That's 16 ounces? That's a double can?
Yeah.
Wow. That's like the old Arizona iced tea cans like that?
They still make them. I love it.
I mean, okay.
It's delicious. It's diabetes for a
buck. I was
going
to say, it's pre-diabetes in a can.
The funny thing about those is if you look at the health, the nutrition facts on them, they're not as bad as like pop, not as bad as Gatorade.
In terms of sugar, really?
Yeah, in terms of sugar and carbs.
Arizona iced tea isn't that bad, you're saying?
The iced tea, it's specifically the iced tea. Once you get into the and that goes for the fruit iced teas. Once you get into like the watermelonade and the grapeade and stuff like that, then it's just yeah. But the iced teas are 150 calories per can, which is
are you sure? Yes. Once that's per serving, it's two servings.
It's 50 per serving. There's three servings per can. It's 150.
That's shockingly low to me.
Yeah, well, it's iced tea, man.
That's like having a devil dog.
Yeah, so it's really not bad. It's like I said, once you get into the other drinks, it gets very. It gets a lot worse, but Vani was surprised to find that out too, because it's actually better for you than like a Gatorade.
Yeah, you know, Gatorade is you should not. I don't know anyone ever drink Gatorade just for leisure. It's to replenish, like when you work out or when you're sick.
I used to drink it all the time when I worked in restaurants because I was constantly moving.
Yeah, that's what it's for. Like they advertise it for athletes, or like I said, if you're sick, the best thing is to have Gatorade if you can't keep down food, you do the Gatorade. It has electrolytes. It has enough sugar.
That's when I drink it, when I'm sick, or if I'm like I said, when I did restaurant work or anything where I was on my feet a lot.
Sure. You want to talk about this craziness, Ian, with Pokemon cards? So COVID relief funds were used for a Pokemon card. A man fraud. This is from USA Today. Man in Georgia. Man fraudulently received COVID relief funds. Then he spent $57,000 on a Pokemon card.
Yep. One Pokemon card. It's funny when you look at what they're charged with. He was charged with wire fraud because of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because it's transferring funds between states.
Yeah, he claimed he was the sole owner of a business that brought in $235,000 in a 12-month span and had 10 employees. He received a deposit of $85,000 in terms of COVID relief funds. 5 months later, on January 8th, he spent $57,789 on a Pokemon card. The card was not described in court documents, and rare Pokemon cards can be worth hundreds of thousands. So that's the sad thing. We don't actually know
what card it was.
But there's at this point, that's not that weird. There's lots of cards that could go for that much.
This was not a PPP loan. Economic injury disaster loan. Designed to help small businesses experiencing hardship because of COVID pandemic. So obviously, it's fun, but these funds could have went elsewhere potentially. And yes, they did do like a second round of like PPP and everything, but like it was tough for that first round. A lot of the big corporations got that. They were pre-prepared with lawyers and they got the money right away. And it hurt a lot of small business. But either way, don't be a fucking asshole and do this shit. It's ridiculous. And now you're going to go to prison.
And get fined. Up to 20 years in prison and $250,000 in fines if convicted.
I don't think he'll go to prison for 20 years, but they'll probably set him away for a few years and a fine. Yeah. Like you think you're going to get away with it? I guess they do. That's why people do it. There's a lot of people try to get the COVID funds and made up like, oh, I have a business with like 40 employees and getting the PPP. It's like, you don't think it's going to catch up with you?
Yeah.
At some point. Maybe a few sneak through the cracks. I don't know. There's always government fraud when it comes to disbursement because people are assholes. There's a lot of assholes out there. A lot of slime balls.
A lot of slime balls.
Take advantage of the common good right there. On the bottom of this article, man who faked his own death gets sentenced to 56 months for COVID business loan fraud.
Wow.
Then this other one, Ferrari, Bentley, and Lamborghini. California man, I saw this article before, I think a few weeks back. California man fraudulently got $5 million in COVID-19 relief money, authorities say.
Jesus.
There you go.
Jesus.
Good Christ. Times. Good times.
That's insane.
What's also insane is Ubisoft emailing you after you stop playing your game.
Hassling you after you've stopped playing the game. Don't do that to me, Ubisoft. I never finish games. The last thing I want to be reminded about is how I'm not finishing my games in my email. So yeah, Ubisoft, apparently you have to sign up for an Ubi account to do a lot of, I don't know if that's what it's called.
Ubi account?
An Ubi account.
Are you an Oopster? Is that part of
it? Are you an Oopster? Is that what they call their listeners? Ubisoft is like, hey there, Oopsters.
Hey, Oopsters.
Hey, Oopsters. Oopster Club.
Get your pin.
Hey, Oopsters. Someone's reporting that Ubisoft is sending out taunting emails that harass players who have not played and says, you disappoint me.
It was amusing watching you fail.
It was amusing watching
Which,
you fail.
It's you're fighting against a dictator in sort of like a Cuba type of environment.
Hola, Rojas. I wanted to thank you for giving me free reign in Yara. Take it easy and know that Yara is in capable hands. El Presidente. And then it taunts you with the amount of time you've played, which is only 3 hours for this person.
You can't save the country in 3 hours? Oh, man. You can't save Yara in 3 hours?
Don't hassle us, Ubisoft. You know what's not a hassle, Pat?
What's not a hassle, Ian?
Go on to ultimatenintendo.com.
Wow, Ian, why is that not a hassle? What can you get there?
You can get books. You can get pins. You can get RBI baseball stickers. I don't know, probably other stuff.
You're holding it together until probably other stuff. Thanks, Ian.
You're welcome.
I do appreciate that. That's how Ian says I want to move it on along. And I'll be on Twitch Wednesday night. Halloween themed. We're going to try find a couple of Elvira blocks from the past on 80s Commercial Vault, the YouTube channel. Twitch.tv/ContraCode. And I also found the original Shocktober commercials, I remembered, from WPIX New York, which was Channel 11, which was, that was like pre... I think they were like WB. That was like pre-WB, Channel 11. They showed, they'd have like no original program. They had their own news. They showed like the Yankee games, and they do like syndicated shows and movies. So in October, it became Shocktober, and every night during the week at like 8, they would show a heavily edited horror movie. One night a week, they would do like Friday the 13th, like 1 through 5.
It's hilarious how much those movies are edited for TV.
I mean everything got edited out. I mean everything.
Boobs, no gore.
No boobs. No, I mean, you didn't see anyone getting stabbed by Freddy Krueger, or like they would cut away.
That stuff was like purpose built.
It was still scary though.
To be like background noise for like trick or treaters. You throw it on the TV and you walk away.
Oh, that's
why
I did that's why I was finishing my homework up.
Yeah.
At 8 o'clock at night doing that stuff. When I'm like, this is like late 80s, early 90s. I remember there was one that did up to like Friday the 13th, part 8, which that came out like 88, 89. So like around there. Because they were doing like
Manhattan, I think, is 88.
Yeah, because they were doing one a year in the 80s about.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I think 6 is 86. That would make sense.
So, or 87. So like, this must have been when I was like 10 years old. They would do this. So they did this up to the early 90s on WPIX New York.
July 28th, 1989 was when that movie came out.
It was New York's movie station. That's what they used to call it. Because on Sundays, they show you like, they'd have twins on Sunday afternoon, the Sunday movie. And it was marvelous. Anyway, I found commercial blocks, not commercials. I found the commercial there. So come to Twitch tomorrow night. I won't be dressed up in a costume, but there's like a 2% chance I will be. I dressed up as He-Man a couple years ago. Remember a few years ago?
You're still riding it.
I tried to get Ian to be Batman. He refused.
I don't dress up. Every year I say I'm going to dress up as Dr. Herbert West from Reanimator, but I never do.
No idea what that is.
It's a fucking fantastic movie.
I'm also going to be at Retro World Expo November 6th and 7th in beautiful, scenic Hartford, Connecticut. Hartford, the insurance capital of the world, I think. Or maybe it used to be.
Reanimator's 1985. Like, that's like, if there was a horror movie I would have thought you would have seen, it would have been like...
It wasn't on Shocktober.
Did you ever see Return of the Living Dead?
I believe...
Very 80s. I've seen comedy,
the
funny.
Comedy one, yes.
It's good? Yes, okay. I've Reanimator's got a lot of comedy in it, too. Yes. So those seem like the types of movies you would have seen.
That was not in the Shocktober. I saw all the... Freddy Krueger ones. I saw most of those. I saw the first 5, and I saw all the Friday 13ths up to 8, basically because of Shocktober.
Yeah,
maybe not the first one. So I think sometimes
well, 9 didn't come out until the awful, awful worst movie ever.
Jason
made.
Goes to Hell.
Jason Goes to Hell was like 91 or 92, maybe even later.
I think it was 93. They skipped a few years in between 8 and that, and that was supposed to set up Freddy versus Jason, which never happened.
Well, obviously. It did happen.
Well, I mean, never.
It didn't set up quite that way, yeah.
Well, it came out 10 years later.
1993 was Jason Goes to Hell. Awful.
It didn't
awful.
Come out until 10 years later, the fucking actual movie.
Awful.
Which
movie.
Was like 10 years too late, because those were the two hottest properties in like the late 80s.
Best thing in Jason Goes to Hell is that first kill with the tent pole, and
I never
it
saw
all
it.
Goes south.
I actually never saw it. That's the one I haven't seen.
So bad.
I've seen Jason X. I've seen Jason.
Jason X. 10 is great. I love X.
Jason 10? You gotta be cool. It's X.
It's not.
It's Roman numeral. It's
saying 10 isn't cool.
Roman numerals there, Ian. That's what you're going for there. Speaking of something that'll
people
never
don't
die.
Call it Jason VII.
We have to start respecting Roman numerals again. Start respecting those. Speaking of something that never dies, Charles Martinet wants to voice Bowser until he's dead. Not Bowser, Mario. I put this wrong. He's not Bowser. This is from Eurogamer. Charles Martinet, who's voiced... Mario since I think before 64. I think he voiced him on the computer game shit that I have around here, like Mario Teaches Typing or whatever. That's when he started.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
Did not know that.
I believe he started a couple years before. But some Mario nut will correct me. I want to voice Mario until I drop dead. I'm not going anywhere for a long time. That's my Mario.
Ooh,
sorry, I didn't. Ooh. Wasn't planning that.
Man,
Martinet, who is 66, has been the voice of the mascot since 92. See, I told you it's computer stuff.
All right,
I know some of my history. After almost 30 years, he has portrayed the plumber around 100 games. I would have said like 50. 100. Wow. I guess like you count like all the tennis games and the golf games and it all adds up.
Yeah, true.
Mario parties. Controversially, Martinet will not play a Mario in Nintendo's upcoming Super Mario movie, which goes to Chris Pratt. And again, that's really a fucking weird decision, that whole thing.
A weird decision that we're not happy about.
He said this at Fan Expo Canada. I want to voice Mario until I drop dead. If someday I think I'm no longer capable of doing it, I will tell Nintendo to look into finding someone else. He also voices Luigi, Wario, and Waluigi. All right, total package right there. I mean, it's a good job. You show up, You do some voices, you're used to it. Then you can go to conventions and it's everyone saying, hey, can you do my voice message on my phone and get paid, you know, 10 grand for going to an event? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What a life. I'd do that.
I can't imagine that being a particularly awful.
Yeah.
Awful gig.
Yeah, I did not meet Mr. Marnette, but Kenny, I forget his last name, who does the voice of Bowser, very nice. I've seen him at multiple conventions. He was just at Retrobalooza, actually. I believe he's from Texas. Yeah. So maybe they can do a death match. Charles Martinet versus Chris Pratt for rights to the character. I don't know. He said, I hope there will still be Mario after I am gone. Anyways, there are over 5 million audio files of me voicing Mario. I go into the studio and record 45 takes of every sound I can think of. So I'm not going anywhere for a long time. So in theory, if he passes away someday, they'll have tons of samples forever.
So that's how, I don't know if it's still done that way, but at least for a little while after the original voice actor who did the Pikachu for the Pokemon cartoons passed away, there was so many sound clips of this person doing Pikachu that I at least know, I think for the season that followed, they didn't get like a replacement voice actor. Yeah, I'm fairly certain they just used the same, all the samples that were there. I don't know if they're still doing that. But yeah, I mean, when these people are these characters forever, especially someone like Mario, who's not speaking in like full sentences, or Pikachu, who's talking in syllables of its name, you're going to acquire enough of that sound to keep that character alive.
The closest analogy I can think of, apparently before Stan Lee passed away, they recorded Stan Lee like green screen in front of all these.
Oh, like all of his interstitials. Like, so like he'll show up in Marvel movies forever,
which is kind of creepy. And yeah. I'm like, not sure if that's, I mean, it's ethical if it's family and he agreed to do that, but it's kind of creepy. But anyway, supposedly they filmed dozens of different scenarios that they can green screen him into any fucking scene for like the future movies, you know, because, wait a minute. No, was he in Shang-Chi? No, I'm trying to remember. He showed up in Shang-Chi.
I don't know.
Was Stan Lee? Because that was filmed after he died, wasn't
it?
Was Stan Lee in Shang-Chi? That's a good question. He wanted Brandon Lee to star as Shang-Chi. Well, that would have been awesome, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago. God, he's been there for 30 years almost, Brandon Lee. Oh, no, they ended it.
Oh, they did? Okay.
It looks like, according to this article, so I guess they're not going that direction. So the last one, Marvel Studios officially ends Stan Lee cameos in MCU. Oh, a good run of 20 movies.
Yeah.
22 he had. So Endgame was digitally de-agedly. Oh, they de-aged him? It was one previous one of Captain Marvel, his final appearances. Okay. There you go. He was 98 when he died. My God, that's a run. Mm-hmm. 98. Wow. All right. Well, then I guess they're not going to go that route, or else whoever told me that information was lying about propping old Stanley up and having
I mean,
stuff.
They might have and then just decided not to.
Maybe in poor taste.
Yeah.
To do that. Poor taste. Ian, does Switch need a more powerful version?
I don't know. No? Yes?
What does my Nintendo News say about that?
What does my Nintendo News say about that?
Saber Interactive's Dmitry Grigorenko, that's a good name, Grigorenko, who is the lead designer of the upcoming World War Z port for Nintendo Switch, has said in a recent interview that he doesn't believe, copy editor, that a more powerful Switch system is needed at present. Saber Interactive is a development studio which has produced a number of high-profile Switch ports, such as Vampyr and The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt Complete Edition. He says the obvious answer would be overall better hardware or with less build and patch size limitations, but I don't think the Switch needs a powerful version that badly. Saber and many other talented studios have already proven that there's no such thing as an impossible port. Nintendo consoles were never about hardware. They're always about something that boosts your gameplay experience, and I can't wait to see what they come up with next. That sounds like boilerplate. So,
yeah. Each game we release on Switch pushes the hardware more than before. So, yeah, it's more boilerplate. But, I mean, I think there's probably something to be said to what he has to say. I would love to see a more powerful version with less frame rate issues and stuff like that. I think everyone would. But I think, if I read a little bit between the lines, I think what he's saying is we're getting to the point where hardware is where it's powerful enough where you can do a reasonable facsimile of just about any game that you want to, but you may have to cut it down in other areas.
Well, didn't we postulate because of that? What was that technology we thought would be in the OLED Switch where it does like that, the real time, like upscaling into like 4K that would have been
right. And that wasn't in there.
Yeah. I know. it wasn't.
Yeah.
But we're almost to that point where you won't need blistering hardware to do these games that look great.
That's what I'm trying to say. You get to, I mean, obviously, and there will be lots of people disagree with me. Obviously, you know, you can do more with more power. But yeah, I think we're getting to the point where our kind of our baseline hardware is good enough to represent a game as its creators would intend.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, we thought that the OLED could have had that upscaling in there because at that point, you all bets are off. You could have your, you know, you okay? You could have your GTA, you know, 5 on that system in theory.
Right.
If you're using like software upscaling to do it without your Switch blowing up in your hand.
Yeah.
From the heat, basically. So, yeah, it's interesting.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You know where we could have needed a more powerful Switch, Ian? To play those N64 games now available on expansion pack
for
Switch Online.
Wow. It's going to be a tricky segue between the official end of the...
That was the segue, Ian.
The segue. Yeah.
So, player, this just came out today. It's online. It's online or late last night. The expansion pack is online. Remember what that is. $50 a year to get your previous Switch Online stuff. And then you get not just the NES and SNES games. Now you get some Genesis titles and N64 games there. And you also have the ability to buy Genesis and N64 Switch controllers, which is interesting if you are a Switch Online member, which I have not ordered because I don't see the point right now of doing it. So it seems like it's very, very mixed, the reaction to the emulation so far.
And it does seem to be dependent somewhat on the title, but people are saying that, you know, basically Mario Kart 64 and Winback aren't using expansion pack settings when they obviously could and should be.
You mean the old school expansion
pack? Yeah, the actual, when they should be. they said there's lag. Zelda is the one that everyone keeps talking about that has quite a bit of input lag, which is, I don't know, bizarre. People are saying that the Wii U download version of Ocarina of Time is, you know, better than the one that's currently offered on this expansion pack. That and but apparently the Genesis emulation seems to be fine, so it really comes down to the emulators that they're using. People have looked
at the M2
maybe because M2 would have handled the emulation for the Switch, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One packages, because these are different games, but there were already emulation packs released for Sega Genesis on this system, and the emulation was largely done by M2, I believe.
So
M2's emulation is really good, so maybe they're using M2's emulation and emulators. That would make sense. Why that wouldn't be as big of a deal. The N64 emulation is being done, however, they said they discovered it's the, can't remember the name, but it's the same emulator that was used for Super Mario 64 on the 3D All-Stars game. And I guess it worked okay for that, but they tried to spread out its usage to these other N64 games, and it's not really doing the job.
I saw obviously people were doing button tests on Ocarina, and it was bad. It was like at least a quarter second delay of the jump from what, just my eyes seeing it.
Sure.
And you know, we're experts at looking at button lag because of another console coming out. So some people were like trying to be apologists and say, oh, what's the matter? He's jumping. It's like, you cannot have that much lag when you're playing an action-oriented game. You can't have like a quarter second or half second between a jump. Are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? And then people were comparing it with, you know, other versions of the game. And it's like, you can clearly see that, you know, instant or not. And like I said, what's weird is that it's weird to be game to game. If they're using whatever the I think someone said it's the same emulator that they were using for the Mario All-Stars pack.
That's what I just said.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So if that's the case, why would it be that much worse on certain games?
I mean, if it's just an in-house emulator, maybe they just had it optimized for Mario 64. You've used N64 emulation before, and you know it can be wildly different from game to game, and it can be...
Sure.
And you can change settings from game to game.
Sure, but the first party you think they'd have, you know, buttoned up, especially since they've been doing this back to the virtual console on the Wii. They've been doing this.
From what
people are saying, this is worse than the virtual console.
Yeah, who knows? It could just be something new that they're starting. You know, like you said, it's probably because they're using a more recent emulator. It doesn't sound like they're using the same emulator that they've put work into over the years. It sounded like they started from scratch, and I don't know why they would do that.
The worst thing I saw, and this is what I'll go into about when people used to get on me for saying N64 emulation is fine when it's not, and this is case number one why it's not, if Nintendo can't get it freaking right. I saw the Mario Kart online multiplayer. I don't know if you saw that on Twitter, 4-player, and it was unplayable. When I saw it, it was like, you know, you're getting like 6 frames a second, 8 frames a second. Like, it was bad. And when you see that, that's like, wow, they literally are probably just, they have not made any leaps and bounds in N64 emulation. I thought maybe Nintendo would have. They have potentially the tools to do that. They have the code of their own console. You're like, and they haven't. It's almost shocking, but not shocking, based on how complex the architecture is on the N64 and how, like, it may never get perfected.
Well, the other thing is...
Or will take a long time, too.
There are N64 emulators that are much closer, and like Frank Cifaldi actually said an hour ago, and it's a common... it's a common sentiment whenever emulation comes up like this on like a commercially released product. One of the reasons is, quite frankly, the corporations don't have the time or the knowledge to put into it that hobbyists and amateur people do.
Sure.
And because emulation is looked at as such a dirty thing by these big businesses, they almost never are willing to reach out and bridge the gap and use these emulators that have been around for years that can actually do what they're trying to do. So they go with an in-house option that's never going to be as good.
Sure. But going back to the point about the N64 emulation, it's not accurate to the look still. And that's why going through this, if you can get awesome emulation that's like 60 frames, but it won't look like how it looked originally. You need a beefy GPU setup, and you need a great computer to do that. And that's what the team's been suffering through trying to do this. And you still need workarounds dependent upon the game. Like, it's not a one-size-fits-all batch thing. But this is embarrassing, I would think. If you were Nintendo, you should be embarrassed by this. You should not have put this out and charged $30 more per year. If these games were not like, I don't say they got to be perfect. You can't have this. I'm looking at this online multiplayer that looks unplayable, and you can't have a quarter to half a second of input lag on a jump on any of your games.
That's what I talked about when we talked about this last week or the week before when they officially announced it. Nintendo doesn't have the goodwill in this area to be charging $50 for that pass. In the past, we said that the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo, the online play was bad. I mentioned that. I didn't think that this was magically going to be fixed. But I think a lot of people, unfortunately, looked at it and said, well, if Nintendo's charging this much for it, then it's going to be good. And it's like, no, they've given you no reason to think that. And that's my whole problem with this expansion pass. It's not even so much the money, because as we talked about, Sony and Microsoft offer the same, it's roughly the same price. It's what you get with the Nintendo Pass, and it's not up to snuff. It you cannot be charging this much for stuff that does not play properly.
Yeah, and then they had online issues with the NES and Super Nintendo games, which that emulation should be just about perfect at this point. The N64 is not perfect emulation, and you still have potential
online problems,
issues on top. I saw some people try to be an apologist and, oh, wow, we're criticizing Nintendo. Yes, we do that. And I don't know how, like, the speedrunner, I have a Screen Rant article I just linked here. A speedrunner, what's their name here? Toofool pointed out that the input lag for 64 was hot garbage despite its faithful visuals. Followed the complaint with a video demonstrating Ocarina of Time's own input lag, showing their Nintendo Switch Pro controller and TV screen in real time for reference.
Oh, so it's not good for Mario either.
The speedrunner ZFG echoed this evidence, concluding that Ocarina of Time on Switch is so bad it might actually be worse than Wii U Virtual Console's version, a remark which carries considerable weight given their renown in this game speedrunning community. However, Toofool clarified in a later tweet that Switch N64 game input lag varies by title, as Mario Tennis allegedly has considerably less lag. That's what makes it so weird, the game-to-game thing on the input lag. I can picture it being more stuttery in some games, or obviously a Mario 64, Mario Kart 64 for the multiplayer, but like even when you're playing on an emulator computer, the input, there's no different input lag on an emulator that I've seen. There's no different input lag, so that's just so weird to me that they didn't button that up. And they're saying it's worse than, you know, the 7 year old Wii U virtual console. Is that 7 years old? Yeah, 7 years old. And I looked at some videos, and yeah, you see people tapping the button, and. Okay.
Yeah, the video for the Mario Kart 64 multiplayer is absolutely abysmal.
It's unplayable.
And that's basically the experience I was expecting. That was my experience playing NES and Super Nintendo games.
I'm looking
with
at
someone
it,
just
I'm
lo- constant choppy.
I'm looking at a
animation.
I'm looking at Two Fools saying this input lag is hot garbage for Mario 64. It might not look horrible, but it feels awful. On that video, it doesn't look considerably bad, but this is a speedrunner. They know when it's off.
Sure.
But the Ocarina lag is like, you can not just see that with your naked eye. You can feel how bad that would be to play that if it's like gets up to like a quarter second.
Wow. Yeah, his thumb is fully up before Link does the backflip.
Yes,
yeah.
That's unplayable. And some people were trying to say, oh, it's fine, he's jumping. It's like, no. You can't.
It's okay to criticize people and things and stuff you like. Yeah. It's how it gets better. It's the only way to make it better.
No need to defend Nintendo on this.
You can criticize it.
Yeah. I don't know how this happens. I don't know how Nintendo could think this would go over well. I just don't. Oh,
because people generally don't trash Nintendo enough when it comes to stuff.
Nintendo
like
gets trashed a lot. You don't think that's it? I don't think they just care. Or maybe they think the casuals wouldn't care as long as they can play Ocarina and Mario Kart. It's like, oh, who cares? But it's like, no, you expect that. That's the thing about Nintendo. We talk about Nintendo's first party games, that you may not like the games themselves, but technically, you know, they're good to go, right?
Yeah,
you don't have a horrible experience. There's not major game breaking bugs or something that ruins your experience just trying to get through the game. This ruins your experience,
right?
This is Nintendo doing something super uncharacteristic. If you're telling me these games aren't as nice as they were 15 years ago on the Wii?
Wii U, they were talking about. They were comparing it to the Wii U one.
Was Wii U
still.
One?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 7 years ago versus 15. I guess I'd love to see someone go back and compare it to the Wii ones then and see if they were.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, why not? They had Genesis games on there. And they had
GameCube ones.
You know, absolutely. This wouldn't be acceptable if this was $20 a month. Still wouldn't be acceptable for Nintendo to put this out, in my opinion. You know. You don't put out an unfinished product like this. Let's see. There's Frank's response, which you went over. People are memeing it, of course. And now the article's coming out saying people aren't happy with it. Like I said before, I wasn't interested in this, even if these were functional at $50. I just didn't see the need right now.
No, but absolutely not non-functional.
No. Eat your what, Ian?
I don't know. I stopped myself. Eat my...
This one person at SW Shrib says, don't buy it. Input lag, online frame drops and stutters, inconsistent fog effect in-game for immersion. Confusing button mapping. Yes, you can't remap the buttons, and it seemed like...
They said, and I don't know which game it was, but something had the buttons as X and Y instead of A and B or something like that.
So the orientation was different versus the N64
yeah.
controller. No controller pack features. What? That's not built into the emulator? No controller pack? So what do you mean? You can't fucking save it? Save your game and load up games? Is that for real?
I think they mean no expansion pack.
Oh, no expansion pack.
That's what I had read.
Okay. That's insane as well. That's built into emulators.
Yeah.
You click a button. It's the 8 meg versus 4 meg or whatever it is. Extra 4 meg.
Extra 4 meg, yeah.
That's all it is. That's all the option is. And then it unlocks it. No CRT effect to hide the unpolished textures. Wow. Okay. Like, they didn't put on a filter to make it look like the original or have the option to. So it doesn't even look like the original N64 games on top. So at that point, you might have upscaled it then. At that point, if you're not getting the traditional look. Yeah, this is bad. I'm trying to remember a time when Nintendo screwed up something this royally bad on something that should have been like a slam dunk or something that should have been like, you know, like, oh, this is a no-brainer. Everyone should love this.
Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah. Like we just said, this is particularly bad because people were upset going in.
Yes. Do you think Nintendo will see their error and be no. like, all right, we're going to give you something. They did it on the 3DS when they lowered the price and gave away free games. Cause that was a disaster. That was a big disaster. That was $250 when it came out.
Yeah.
3DS.
Well, that was a great turnaround. I don't know that they'll do that with this. And that's why I said I have no interest in this expansion pack until a year has passed and I see what they do with it, because I figured it's just going to be more of the same shit.
Do you think do they have an incentive to try to fix the emulation? I mean, do they? I mean, this is a problem now. They're going to, if they announce more games for this on the N64 side and they still have these problems, they're going to face a wave of criticism each and every month or every 2 months when they announce new games.
Yes.
If they come out with like Banjo on here, or they're not going to be able to get GoldenEye, unfortunately, because all the rights issues. But if they did that and it was unplayable, if GoldenEye did come out and everyone would get it for the multiplayer and it was unplayable, why even have it then?
This is the problem. That, like, as we said, this has always been an issue with their online service. But while, yes, there are definitely 8 and 16-bit games that we all remember playing together and we enjoy in multiplayer, N64 is a multiplayer system.
Yeah, it's a party
These
console.
Games are absolutely going to be tested online with other people, more so than NES and Super Nintendo. NES and Super Nintendo don't have great outline. Fine, you're still playing Donkey Kong Country and Zelda 2 and Super Metroid and all that stuff by yourself. But with the N64, with the exception of stuff like Mario and Zelda, you know, everything else
is a
Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers.
All the first-person shooters. GoldenEye.
All the racing games.
Racing, yep.
I love to play Cruising USA, you know, multiplayer. Why not? Just for the fun of it. Now you tell me it'll be like 4 frames a second.
Yeah.
You know, against someone.
So
it's disappointing. Hopefully they can turn this around and fix this emulation. But as Frank alluded to, you have people that have been working on these emulators for decades, and Nintendo's probably like, it's an afterthought to us.
Right.
It is what it is. So, but this is bad. And unfortunately, I don't know if this is a Nintendo Japan thing where, you know, if they got to communicate, maybe Nintendo of America's be like, hey, we need to fix this. And Japan would be like, well, who cares? We're going to get all that Animal Crossing DLC money.
You right.
Know, like, whew, it's bad. Ian.
Yeah, Pat.
We're excited about the upcoming Intellivision Amico.
Oh.
We're especially excited because for the first time we can buy not physical games, but physical products that might eventually turn into a game.
Physical products.
That could turn into a game.
Love a physical product. I love to just buy physical products to have physical products. Hey, physical stuff.
So these are now ending up in people's hands that pre-ordered them in packs of 4 or 8 because you can't buy one at a time. Tommy Tallarico, CEO, a lovely individual, did an unboxing video.
CEO.
Did an unboxing video, which was funny because, like, you know, you're the CEO, and he's just tossing the games around like they're garbage into the box. And then pointed out, I'm not going to belabor every single, I'd be shocked that there wasn't an error or issue with these games. He showed that on the Biplanes game.
It wasn't bolded and said that it was a variant.
It's a variant.
A limited variant.
He admits that it got through like 6 or 7 people's, you know, I guess, you know, you're looking over, you're going to troubleshoot anything. You're going to do some copy editing and it got past everyone. That's not a problem, but it's a symptom of the larger disease that is inside Intellivision Entertainment.
Yes, everything is half-assed.
Everything is half-assed. There's errors everywhere, and this is just part of it. So I'm not going to dwell on that. I want to go to someone who was actually excited. Do you see this YouTube video? This is from user. Let's see what user this is. From user Genovi, J-E-N-O-V-I. Not worth the $165.74. Intellivision Amico physical box impressions. Video will be delisted soon. I'm not sure why they delist them. Got like 3,000 views almost.
So he said he was going to delist it because it's not really his channel is mostly fairly positive and he didn't want to leave something super negative up. But I think he realized that it might be important to leave up because it's still up. And people asked him if he could leave it up.
It's a PSA because this is a person who was excited for the Intellivision Amico, ordered these physical products, received them and realized the quality was not worth all the money spent on them. So Some of the complaints were, obviously they're small. They're like Vita size, these boxes. But they're digipacks, which are like the DVDs I've done, which means you can't close them.
I think digipacks, honestly, depending on what you're selling in them, can look kind of nice. But you can get magnets in there. They make magnet-sealed digipacks. They make digipacks that can close.
Well, that's great, but television
why
didn't
you
do
wouldn't,
that.
Yeah, why you wouldn't, I don't know.
I maybe when I did my DVDs 8 years ago, I don't know if that was a thing or not, but I guess time marched on. But the point is that these are not traditional, even like a Genesis game, a shell that closes, an N64 box, an NES box. You can't keep these closed.
An Evercade box?
An Evercade. Mm-hmm. Go back to Evercade. This snaps closed really nice.
This is $20. $20.
For an actual physical game,
like,
and a manual.
I like my Evercade. I don't use it a ton. I use it before I go to bed. I'm not trying to like sell Evercade here, but if you want to see what you can get for $20, you can get a $20 plastic case that closes that comes with actual physical media and a full color manual, as we've stated before.
Yes,
there's no reason this fucking tchotchke coin and RFID card should be costing you $20.
And a lenticular card.
A lenticular card. Yes,
this is. Again, $20, this costs way more to produce than this shit you see here that some people are postulating $1 to produce. Because the coins cost like 10 cents in bulk. The RFID cards cost fucking 10 cents, 20 cents.
He's hosing you because you're gullible and they need money.
Yes, which we were correct on that they were going to sell these before the console comes out, which again is another first.
And speaking of shadiness, this person doesn't mention it, I don't believe, in their video. But they mention it in the comments section. The thing that they're most disappointed about is this person pre-ordered the Amico. They said Genovi or whatever. They said that they were looking forward to the Amico. They pre-ordered the Amico. However, they were not the type of person who was following every bit of news on the Amico. They really had no idea what was going on. It was something they put the money into. They knew that it had been delayed, but they weren't following everything. And they said they felt particularly burned because the how they found out about the physical games being available, for the physical products being available for order, was from an actual Intellivision Amico email that they got. And he states that they don't actually do a very good job of explaining that it's not a physical game in there. He says he felt like he was duped.
Wow.
He said he felt like he was duped because they don't really go over the fact that it's an RFID card or anything in the actual email from Intellivision. You're left to kind of figure that out on its own. So he said
So if you got that email randomly, hadn't been paying attention, oh, I'm going to buy these
games.
That's
basically what he had done. Wow. He was like, okay, you know, the system's not out yet, but I'll buy the games. I'm looking forward to it. Bought the games, got them, and was, you know, he says he was actually fairly surprised to open it and find that it was just a digital card.
We take for granted that it's our job to keep up with this mess.
Right. There are people who are into this who probably don't pay attention to it as much as we do. And honestly, that's fine. I understand. There are things that I look forward to that I actually look forward to that I don't pay as much attention to as this.
Sure. Some comments that he was replying to from people in the comments here. I said, Genovi said, I'm still interested in the system, but there's a ton of red flags and issues I didn't even mention in this video.
Yes. I think is the word I'm talking about.
I'll keep my pre-order, but that's it for physical products. This certainly has dropped expectations for me. So Genovi probably didn't been keeping up with as much. And now it's like you get dropped back into it. You did your pre-order at this point over a year and a half ago. And that's what's going on. I try not covering things I'm disappointed with, but I'm really disappointed here. Also, as the guy who covers really odd and obscure items that shouldn't have been made, how could I not own this? Someone asked him why he, you know, pre-ordered it. There's a couple more I'll say. Box quality is like something you would get with a Chinese knockoff being sold for 5% the cost and quality.
So I'm guessing it's probably really thin card stock too.
Yeah, I think he mentioned that, and people are reporting that it's thin.
Yeah.
It's thin. This is actually a funny comment from Mike Crow. Well, in their defense, they probably never thought anyone would actually open one up and play it. Well, you can't play it right now. We'll get into in a second what's actually on the RFID card. And then finally, Genovi said, the last thing I'll say that he said, all I can do is not purchase any additional ones going forward. The value, in quotes, is 100% absent here, and anyone who tells you different is blowing smoke. So this is why I like this person. This was a fan. This isn't like someone who gets Tommy, you know, on their channel every other week or interview Tommy 20 times, doesn't fly out to a fucking event across the country to hang out with all. This is someone that was interested initially, hadn't kept up with it, had pre-ordered it, and now has been dropped back in. Totally, like, what is going on?
This is a representation of the true market.
Yes. This is the market of someone who was interested in it.
Right.
Originally. This is your best case scenario, by and large, with the public that pre-ordered this. Someone that was you kept the information away, or the person didn't seek it out. All right, spend $160 once you factor in tax and shipping, $165.74, and now we're going to give you something, and you're going to be super disappointed. But guess what? We got your money. Ha, ha, ha. Who knows if these will ever be ever become the download for a game in the future. It doesn't matter.
This is the response that I wanted to find. This was actually in response to Retro Advisory Board. And he says, yeah, I have some major issues with how these were marketed in the email I received. Poor quality, lousy design, no physical game, though that wasn't disclosed, and in no way something worthy of collecting. It's beyond disappointing. A $10 package that contains a hotel door entry card with a download code for a $10 game is insane. There's a ton they could have done differently to make these feel special, but these don't feel special, and I certainly won't be in the minority here. That's Genovi. But the main thing I wanted to point out is, and I know he goes into more detail later, but he does mention a couple of times how deceived he felt by the ad from Intellivision. And I feel like that's how it's going to be for a lot of people. All the people who are in the, you know, the Yes Club with Tommy, they're not going to feel disappointed. They're going to hand wave this stuff. But when it actually gets out to the public, the people who might actually truly be interested in it, like you said, but don't have the insider's info.
The insider info, yes.
Yeah, I mean, they're going out of their way to make to obfuscate that this is not actually a physical game.
Yeah. So this leads us into, all right, Genovi, you just spent $165.74 on RFID cards and cheap coins. What's actually on, Ian, the RFID cards? Well, we have some intrepid folks out there who got their RFID scanners out and are telling us what's on there. Did you see on the Reddit there?
Yeah, they link to pretty basic websites. They go to intellivision.com/the name of the game.
intellivision.com/RFID/, for example, biplanes, ?i=. So this is from user Powerclaw that's reporting this. These, from what people are saying, are unencrypted website links.
Yep.
That are on each of these cards. And the identifier, the ?, is basically the game code. That's the same code that's printed on the back of each card.
Right.
That's what this is. They are currently just pointing to a website that I guess in the website URL in the future that will be the download code that will download to your console. That's literally what I have when I sell my book digitally, drop cards. There's a code. You go to the website, you put your code in, and you download it. That's what this is. For a game, though, to be unencrypted like this and just to go to the website, that's insane to me. And they even said...
Yeah, I don't know enough about it to speak authoritatively on any of it, but it doesn't sound good, and it sounds like it would probably be easy to mess with.
Powerclaw, I'm going to trust that they know more about this than me. They said, doesn't seem very complex. I expected the data would be encrypted and obfuscated and tied directly to the Amico hardware for decryption, then passed securely via a non-public service to activate and download. Instead, it seems anyone can scan the card using even just a mobile app and load up what will eventually be the activation URL. This will be fed to the Amico as a page request, and the server will initiate the download from that. Now, consider that people can do this just by bringing the sealed boxes within range of their phones to capture the key data, and Tommy's insistence that they are withholding a bunch of boxes to put them in retail stores to defend the nearly sold out claim. This means anyone can skim the identifying details just by passing by at a store. I can imagine the user can then transmit this URL via NFC, as modern phones allow, to the Amico and emulate the cards in this way. So what he's saying is this. You'd hope that these IDs for all these eight games are not sequential. If they're sequential, then all bets are off. You can have people basically just create their own clone Amico cards and just create them. But even not, What he's saying is what people can do without a script even is just go into the store, find every single one, and basically steal all the codes off the games. And then reuse them themselves or create their own cards if they wanted to. And put, I don't know, put them on eBay. Because the same way people made their own, Amiibo cards, you know, to basically use instead of having the statues, people have done that, you know. This goes against everything that, you know, the CEO has said about, well, the retailers love our product. They're going to love the games. You think a retailer like Best Buy is going to want this shit on
something
their store?
Something so insecure.
Something so insecure that some people will be literally, you'll be able to buy it. You can buy it, take it home, keep it in the shrink wrap, scan it, and bring it back, get your money back, and you still have the game. Or even worse, you'll have people show up, try to get it on their console, tap it, and maybe it's someone's already used it. And then Tommy said, well, if that happens, you can put it in the code by yourself in order to unlock it. Then it transfers. You're going to have all these ownership of these games ping-ponging back and forth between different people. On top of that, it's supposed to be NFT as well. So you got to burn the fucking energy to transfer the ownership each time. This sounds insane. This is insane. Versus just having a regular digital store?
I still don't think NFT is actually going to play any part in this.
You think that's just a big lie? Supposedly I saw they got grant money because they're using NFT.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, we'll see, I guess.
This console and the games partially exist because of grant money, by the way, of taxpayer funds. In Tommy's interview, this is Power Claw continuing. In Tommy's interview with the Best Buy guy, he was asked specifically about people who may sneak in with their Amico, or apparently just their phone, and capture the data to mimic the RFID and activate a game. He seemed a little off guard by the idea, then quickly said there are things in place to mitigate that without explaining. I will bet money there's nothing in place to mitigate that
from
happening. There's nothing in place for that. They either didn't think about it or didn't fucking care about that.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing in place to mitigate that.
Paraclaw says, I got the impression he was just saying something to make it seem more secure than it really is. And really don't know that anyone at a television even realized the cards could be scanned while in the box until after they've been manufactured. Or they didn't care. The lack of any apparent complexities with their chip data to me suggests that they had to go this route specifically because the back-end infrastructure is not nearly capable enough to handle anything advanced. There is no back-end infrastructure probably to handle this. This was their approach to getting physical media created with a simple embedded URL that they could then deal with at any time before launch by simply creating the website scripts to parse the ID and handle the activation. Minimal involvement of the Amico hardware itself. Paraclaw says all this is speculation, of course. I'll trust their judgment. I'll trust the judgment of them and other people above our pay grade that have looked into this. I will at this point.
Sure.
Edit. And really, this same pattern and approach seems to be what Tommy was using in 2019 with the purported giveaways via RFID/NFC lenticular card scanning. I have not a clue if that competition ever really happened, let alone if any winners were announced, but he was planning to check entrance in the same way. Okay, I don't really know what he's talking about. I vague thoughts about they had a contest way back when. So here's the point. All these people that are buying these cards... you probably will be okay with other people not spoofing the URL and getting your game. But what's not to create some intrepid hacker to try to, I don't know, go into these are on Intellivision's website. This isn't encrypted. And basically find the database of every single one of these codes.
Right.
Like right now doing
sure.
it. If they're on the website, if they point to the website right now, what's not to have someone maybe... once the system...
Well, they would have to have that done, and I highly doubt they do.
But what if this gets up and running, what's going to prevent someone... I'm not saying you should go out and do this, to do like some brute force stuff to try to get all the codes and basically use them to make them invalid.
Right.
That, you get all the list of all the codes that exist, because you get a list of codes when you do this stuff. Again, my own experience is the digital stuff for my books. They print you out a bunch of codes. That are, you know, they're one person per code. If they're not encrypted, though, what if someone just sets up an Amico or and just says, all right, I'm going to download all of those. You better have it set in your systems, Amico, in television. Be like, you have one download per person per console. Because some intrepid person could probably waste all those codes if they decided to.
Yeah.
Especially the codes tied to those cards. There's so much wrong with this that it's insane to me now. It's even worse and worse than even a couple weeks ago.
I called it months back. I honestly think if this does make it to market, there's definitely going to be issues of people trying to validate those games, and it's not going to work.
That's what you think? Won't be set up for it, or they'll be used or not?
It's going to be fucking wrong. But
not to belabor the point about Best Buy or Target or GameStop, you think they want to deal with this bullshit? With this security?
No.
Stuff happening? They want to deal with customers coming back pissed with their $20 games, be like, hey, this doesn't work, or lying and saying it worked, but they already... you know, got their game on the console. This is nuts. It's nuts. Remember, Ian, though, these aren't games that people have bought.
No.
They are physical
items.
Physical items. And why is that another point to bring up, Ian? You know where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I remember. It has to do with the profit sharing.
Okay.
Because they... get into this. This is a good stuff. By the way, I just want to point out that the Intellivision Amico Reactions Thanksgiving Point video is sitting at 3.7K views. That is what I would say... I would call landing with a wet thud.
Yeah. So, Republic.co, which is, you know, that's the investment site that deals with games and consoles. So, if they have the SEC filings for people that... can't afford shirts, but can afford to blow $10,000 on Intellivision. What they have there are the SEC government filings that tell you exactly what goes into your investment. If you put in your $1,000, how do you get back that investment?
Right. Here's the roadmap for what happens.
Here's
the
roadmap. So it was revealed that they didn't get the $11 million promise, but it looks like through the filings, they got about Intellivision received about a $7.5 million. I feel bad for anyone that gave 1 cent to that, but it's gone. That's all I'm going to say. It's gone. But in theory, you could make up to a 10x return on the investment, which, again, you're not technically investing into Intellivision Entertainment. You're investing into you're getting a profit share. If Intellivision was sold to another company, doesn't matter. You didn't invest in the company. This wasn't like a stock. You got profit.
Actual investment.
It's the worst type of investment. It's also capped with a time limit, which I'll get into real quick. But it's also worse because it's capped. So you take all the risk and you get up to a 10x return, which means only 9x once you get back your original investment. You can get up to 9x, you know, of times your original investment here. Okay, so follow along, kids, boys and girls. So when you look at the SEC filing here, I put the link down there for you, Ian. The big thing to look at here is there's different tiers here. There's different tiers about how you get back your investment. And the first tier is basically until Intellivision makes 3 times the initial investment, which would be around, we'll just say $22 million, 22 and a half with Pat Math. They would make that back. So that's great. That's great if you ever make that money back, because that you get a certain percentage for each tier, which I have to find right now on here. There's 3 tiers. So what's important to realize is that there's different offerings and percentages based upon the tiers. There's direct console revenue, indirect console revenue, and there are purchasable games. It says games specifically.
Yes.
So direct console sales right here is defined by Intellivision sells it directly. Like, I guess through their website, it's direct sales. That you go to Intellivision.com, you buy a console, they ship it to you, right? So in the first tier, up to, I guess, the $22.5 million they make, the FIG investors, this is a lot of numbers stuff, but I'm going somewhere with this. It would be calculated as 15% of direct system revenue. They would only get 5% of indirect system revenue, which would be wholesaling. That would be things like they define, like, let's see, that's like Best Buy. If that'd be Coke Media, online Amazon, if not shipped directly from Intellivision, shipped somewhere else than shipped. And then the rest is 25% of all revenue derived from purchasable games. That is up to $22.5 million. After that would be hit, you got 12 months, and then everything drops. 0% indirect system revenue goes to the investors. Only 10% of direct system revenue.
Investors.
And 20% of all revenue from purchasable games. After that 12-month period, you have 1 more year to recoup your investment or make money. 0% of indirect system revenue, 5% of direct system revenue, and 15% of all revenue derived from purchasable games. So even on its surface, it's awful to have a cap on your investment, but you have a cap on here. It's basically 2 years after they hit $22.5 million, according to this, if I'm following this right. Which they ain't never going to hit $22.5 million. Well, I mean, they're not. But even so, the payouts are so low on this, which I won't get into now because that's a lot more calculation. that you're not going to recoup your investment at $22.5 million anyway.
The break-even point is what, $54 million?
Something
57?
Around $50 million for every 1,000 invested. That's what I believe people calculated out.
I think that's a little lenient, but yeah,
something like that. We'll just say that. That's in theory what it is. Based upon. You go on a FIG's website, you can see that. You can see their own little graph on there, what they calculate out.
Right.
There are different scenarios on this. But this is what's interesting about this.
Going back to games.
Going back to the games. So right now, if you invested in FIG, in theory, you would get 25% of all revenue would go towards the investment pool. You get 25% of the percentage of the sale from purchasable games.
Well, let's remember that the games themselves are not actually listed as games. They are listed as physical products. Physical products, not games. They are a promise of a game when the game is finished or releases. So what's this mean? People who have invested in Amico, and if you go to places like FIG and you look, there are people who are asking, you know, is there going to be any action on shares this year, this, that, and the next thing? Those games that are being sold aren't going to have any impact, as far as we know. If you look at how the legalese is, those games are not going to have any impact on investor shares.
Well, I think it's strange that the last Republic update to investors was on September 30th, announcing the new video, I guess, which would have been from the Boomers event, and now they're going to be in Salt Lake City. There's been nothing on this investment site telling the investors about the shipping or the success or the sales so far of the physical products.
Probably because they'd expect to get some money from that.
Again, I'm not 100% sure, but this all tells a very strange story here. A very strange story.
Yep.
If you invested in this on Republic, you should start asking questions. If you're aware of these physical products, you should ask directly, hey, are we getting a percentage of this revenue on all these that have sold so far? And people estimate they've sold like 10,000 individual games, something like that. That's what I saw an estimate of. They sold through like a fifth of them in the first few days, and then it just died out. This is weird stuff. And this is why when you invest in anything, you have to read the prospectus and what's actually involved. Because otherwise, you'll have people on YouTube hawking and shilling potentially physical products that they're getting none of the investment revenue from that. Is that funny?
Physical products that are apparently marketed to consumers in shady and non-specific ways in terms of like what they actually are, going back to what Ginobili said too. The whole thing just reeks of fucking...
It gets worse and worse. And I didn't want to bring up the investment stuff before because you have to go through the numbers. But I wanted to wait until I saw something that, like in black and white, like this, showed you why this is a bad investment.
Right.
And this is number one. In theory, Intellivision doesn't have to pay a cent of anything to the Republic investors from these physical products because they're not purchasable games.
They're not purchasable games. Selling you games. It says it right on the box. They're not selling you a game.
Sorry, investors. Sorry you put in $10,000. Some people put in $25,000. You can see all the different. Some people put in $5,000. Some people put in $50,000. Sorry. You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir. And Tommy loves Willy Wonka. We know that.
Does he?
Oh, yeah.
I like Willy Wonka.
But I'm just saying. Isn't that special?
It is. It's very special.
They went out of their way to say you are buying physical products the last few months. They changed their tune. They changed the narrative. Well, plus because they weren't games.
No, they weren't. But they realized that they couldn't back it up.
But I thought, well, that's probably just a legal thing because, you know, it's false advertising. Oh, no. It's investment details, too. They can't call them games because if they called them games, they might have to give some of that investment money back to the actual investors who trusted Intellivision with their hard-earned money that are now they're done. At least when it comes to these physical products, they're done. They got to wait for system sales in order to try to recoup some of the cost. Man, oh man. Yeah. Is there anything else on this, Ian? I mean, it's turned the corner now where I now have to look at the fucking investment SEC filings to look at, see that, wow, there's some reason behind some of this madness that's going on.
Yeah. No, it's not good. It's bad.
Ian, we got a Patreon, don't we?
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go. You kindly give us some money. And we have a full video podcast that you get. You get to vote in poll topics. We do hangouts.
You do a writing?
I do writing.
And now we have exclusive podcasts.
Bonus podcasts.
Bonus snippets between, 15 and 30 minutes. You get to hear us yammer on about other stuff.
Snackins. Yeah. Bonus snacks.
The Cracklins. A Twisted Root. And this is our poll this week. In second place, what video game character do you look up to admire? 27%. And in first place, 73% on the tail end of our last topic. Why is it important to call out nostalgia bait game projects, Ian?
Well, I think the main reason to call them out is because they they rarely seem to be successful. Almost all of them seem to fall apart. And they oftentimes seem to come from people who have spent a lot of time on message boards or were once popular in the video game industry or community. And I think they often way, way underestimate how much work and effort is required to go into these things. We saw it with the RVGS/Chameleon, where, one of the things that we constantly laughed about with that was Mike Kennedy saying in earnestness, not joking, that he already had the shells. The hardest part was done.
Which was insane, because the console shape is the last thing you worry about.
Maybe it's expensive. Yes, getting a tool, getting a model tooled and getting all the tooling done is expensive, but it is not the most important fucking part. In no way, shape, or form is it the most important part. He looked at that and just went off and said, I'm almost there. And he's just, you can tell he looked at that and he just sat there. I don't know if he was drinking or smoking or maybe he was sober, but his imagination ran wild with it. And he decided he had all the skill needed to put something in that box that could play games.
Let's put a finer point on that. There is a very good chance the Coleco Chameleon would never have existed as a product if Mike Kennedy did not get the Jaguar shell mold. It might have never even been a twinkle in his eye.
Right, but that was the part that gave him the spark.
Insane.
I'm halfway there.
Which is insane, yeah. By the way.
No,
I say
is.
That. I think it's interesting that the track record of these projects. And someone commented, well, there's some the good nostalgia-driven products. A lot of them are game-related. But when I say nostalgia bait, I mean something that drags you in just on the surface, being like, hey, remember when? Play again, which was the Chameleon retro tagline. Like just, nostalgia. Throw nostalgia at you. We cloud your judgment. You remember when you were 4? I can give you that same feeling again when you're 40 or when you're 35. And you're going to feel exactly the same way, but it's going to cost some money. So,
and I hated that tagline too, but I hated it because for the type of person he was trying to get, that's the sort of schlocky say nothing bullshit that works.
Yes. It's used car salesman stuff.
Yeah.
It's used car salesman stuff. And we've seen it with other projects since then. Absolutely. So this is why I put down a few notes here about accountability, delivering what's promised, and nostalgia blinding and clouding judgment. Accountability. A lot of times when these companies or ventures come up, they're companies that either didn't previously exist or maybe they did other things. Talked about the Dreamcade before. Mm-hmm. There was a company, and that guy's kind of after me before. They did arcade cabinets, like custom arcade cabinets, and then they said, we're gonna do the Dreamcade. We're gonna sell you a console where you can remember, you can like scan.
That was the one with the ROMs, like you could search for ROMs.
Yeah,
on, like,
you would,
the special.
You would get a photo of a game. It would download somehow legally the ROM to your console to play. It's like that's things like that, and a lot of people got taken in by things like that. And then the problem is with a lot of these companies is that they don't worry about the ecosystem of their product even after it launches or even if it's quality. The Retro Engine Sigma, some of those people or some of those fucking consoles were smoking. They didn't even look like what they were supposed to look like. They were supposed to look like little Ataris. They looked like silver, shitty Genesis systems.
Yeah, I remember they changed that shell.
So, but it doesn't matter, especially if it's an Indiegogo, because once it's out, they got your money. I mean...
Yeah, I think that's the thing that a lot of people need to really be aware of with this is, like you said, the accountability. One, these people don't have a past in doing this. And two, and you see it with the Intellivision Amico, too. So much of the talk makes it sound like, even if it's not directly said, that launch is endgame. Just getting it out there is endgame. Support afterwards is not even remotely even thought of. For a lot of these people, they want to get the project out and move on to the next, you know, nostalgia bait.
A lot of times these companies make enough money to like make it worth their time to put out a shoddy but not, it's not big enough where there's enough complaints and where people really go after them. For example, going back to the Dreamcast replay, here, they raised $228,000 to 1,600 backers back then. So for them, you know, that was enough for them. You know, we got that. And then you look at the updates in the community, and, you know, their last update was like, let's see, a year and a half ago. There was a patch in 2019, a patch update moving forward. When I heard from this when this came out, people were not happy when this came out. There was bugs. They needed patching. But it's like at some point they can just say, okay, we're done. We don't have to continue with this. It's not worth our time and money. If you complain, well, there's only 1,600 of you.
Right.
It is what it is. We moved on. When again, a game console is an ecosystem that has to be supported and loved and cared for and nurtured, like baby Spike, or you know, or it'll bite you on the chin. So that's the one reason why we feel that it's necessary to point this stuff up. I think it's a disservice to the consumers, and it's also an insult to my intelligence. Others would say, well, it's just video games. Who cares? Why are you talking about this? It's like, then you are allowing people to get taken advantage of. You're allowing nefarious people to potentially take advantage of others at that point. That's what it comes down to.
Right.
Would you be comfortable? Would you be able to do a podcast like this and not call out some of this stuff?
Oh, no. No, you've got to be able to call that out, because it's the sort of thing that people get trapped up into. They see a flashy video, or they see a you know, a plastic shell or a rendering of a plastic shell that they think looks nice, and they go for it. And it's not like we haven't been, you know, caught up in it. We weren't caught up, but we talked about that one, I think, ages, years and years ago, the Vega, that was like the portable
Spectrum. Yes, we mentioned it.
That looked neat, and I, you know, it ended up going nowhere. These things have more failures than they do
success.
Oh
yeah, it's hard. It's actually, we talked about that all game controller that a lot of people didn't get that. Yeah. It's almost like you only got to think of the ones that were actually a success when it comes to hardware, and it gets difficult.
The new Mini Spectrum, I believe, has a lot of people who are excited.
Mini Spectrum? They're doing another Spectrum?
I think it's one of those.
Excuse me, ZX Spectrum.
ZX.
Don't get mad at me.
Apparently there's a pretty decent homebrew community for it.
Was that on Kickstarter?
I can't recall. Like I said, I'm not super, super into it. I mean, you look at stuff like the Polymega, which, if you know, apparently shipping now. Is it actually shipping? If people started to get those,
supposedly
it was supposed to ship
our
it.
Pal Dan says he got a notice saying it's on the way.
Okay.
We'll see.
So, they finally got that, but that took them 4 years.
Well, 3 years.
So even a success, 3 years, even a success, even one that finally came through in the end, you know, took a lot longer than I think people initially, a lot longer than people initially thought it would.
And that changed what the original vision was as well.
Yeah,
even like the final hardware project, it wasn't what was originally intended,
right?
You know, so again, it's tough. It's not like a company like Analog's been around now for over 10 years, you know, that's put out a lot of successful
so you
projects.
See companies like Analog that have succeeded in this way. Okay,
but they walked before they ran,
right?
They did you know, Neo Geo, you know,
controllers
stuff way
and
back
stuff
in the
first,
day,
right?
before they did the original NT. That was, you know, hacked from Famicom, for example. But you really got to be careful. You also have to be careful that these companies, it would be awesome if all these companies, you know, crowdfunding hardware is tough for a lot of different reasons, because at that point, you don't have money to sustain it after the original, you want to say, investment in the company. You're helping to build that company.
Right.
So all the people that pre-ordered $100 for the Amico are helping to build the company up. It's a pre-revenue company. I guess the difference between a pre-revenue and a revenue company. With a revenue company like Analog, if you're pre-ordering that, they have money already from their past successes. They're sustainable. If something tragically happens to their current product or whatever, they can probably still survive and go on and even do refunds. A company like Intellivision or a startup, they don't have the funds necessarily if something goes wrong. They might just disappear. They may not, potentially, they may not be able to refund your money.
Television is a startup. And that's another thing that we need to bring up, that a lot of people are eager to support these things because they see the names they remember from their youth or their teenage years attached to them. So they see Intellivision. They see ColecoVision attached to these things. They see Atari on
Coleco,
something.
Yeah.
They see Coleco, they see Atari, they see Intellivision attached to these things, and they think, oh, it's, you know, for my use. But it's not. It's an opportunistic person who spent money on a trademark.
Not to get back to how much the CEO of Intellivision Entertainment is a fucking liar, but I remember earlier on when we said this had nothing to do with the original Intellivision and Mattel, Tommy called us out and said, oh, we have some of the original people that worked at Mattel at the time. The fucking SEC filing on Republic straight up says this company has nothing to do with Mattel and the original Intellivision console in the 80s. It says that on the fucking prospectus. The government filed SEC prospectus says that.
Yeah,
well, to warn investors, it says that.
That was a very specific era of Tommy Tallarico where he lied through his teeth about anyone he might have said hi to once.
Yes. Yes. So, again, but a lot of the people that buy this stuff, they may not know. Oh, I see Intellivision. Well, I remember having Intellivision when I was a kid, even when that was a product, not a company that made it.
Right.
So I'm just going to assume it's the same people again. So there's a lot of hurdles. And unfortunately, and I saw someone, a really intelligent person that I respect on Twitter, sort of get, I don't want to say blind by nostalgia, but get overly enthusiastic, perhaps, about the Amico. Because, hey, you remember when you were a kid, you had a lot of fun. You want to relive that. And it's so easy to get taken in by that feeling. Yep. Nostalgia. We talked about how we talked about if nostalgia is even technically like a poison in a way.
I always feel like nostalgia is poison, and it always gets people who are angry at me. They always take me extremely too serious. But yeah, overall, I think nostalgia is more poisonous than it is beneficial.
But it can make you feel good. It's almost like alcohol is technically a poison. It can make you feel good. Too much of it can kill you. Or make you throw up at the same way, right?
Nostalgia, my biggest problem with nostalgia is too much nostalgia holds people back. They refuse to try new things because they're too wrapped up in making things the way they were. They're not paying attention to living in the here and now.
My problem is that nostalgia can not help you evolve as a person, potentially, because you want to stay trapped in that certain time as well.
That's exactly what
I said. Oh, okay. When you say move, I thought you meant move forward with games and things like that.
No, I mean it traps your mindset in the past. You are not open to new experiences. You are not open to evolving.
Oh, not just for games, you mean in general?
I mean in general, yes.
Okay.
Most people who are really into the 80s in terms of games also talk a lot about how they wish that it was still the 80s. I mean, I see people like that.
Well,
all the time.
I do, but for other reasons, but yes.
I know.
I love the 80s. Bring back the...
I'm happy with the social advances we've made, as small as some of them may feel.
But not in fashion or music. Well, give me the fashion and music, at least. Give me that.
Okay. No.
You think we're better off with social media and Instagram?
I think moving on is always beneficial as opposed to staying in the past.
All right. I want the music. I want the music in members-only jackets back. All right. Give me that.
Yeah, I like a members-only jacket.
Oh, okay. See, we can agree
That's
on
fine.
That. So anyway, just to put a little bow on this. It's important to call out these projects because of accountability or lack thereof. Delivering what is promised, which goes into accountability, but a lot of these don't deliver what is promised, especially if it's an Indiegogo, which doesn't require a hardware prototype or a Kickstarter. And clouding your judgment, it could happen.
Yeah.
So my recommendation is just don't – I'm not saying you can't want these sort of products or get into them. Wait until they are released. Wait until there's a track record with the company, at least, that they've done prior projects.
Yeah, I see
projects.
Things all the time that kind of grab my attention, but you just got to fucking be cool about it.
Just got to take a step back. Okay, I like that. Like the old days, Ian. Back in the old days, you wouldn't know a product was coming out, a toy or game, until you saw it in your Toys R Us circular.
Saw it in your brand name's Christmas book.
There you go. In your service merchandise catalog.
Brand name's home for the holidays.
We didn't have that one, but no. Okay. Ian, we're going to listen to some voicemails, aren't we?
I guess.
Go to anchor.fm/theseaofpodcast and you can leave us a voicemail. Hopefully it's a shorter one. That we appreciate the short ones. We're going to do a little spookier Halloween themed one this week for you.
Spooky.
We're going to work in a couple things here and there. We want to start with the Halloween one or work into it. I'll start with it.
Hey Pat and Ian, Blake from Buffalo, New York here again. Question. Seeing as it's the Halloween season, what was your most favorite thing to go dressed up as? And also, what was your least favorite thing to get while trick-or-treating? Thanks for the content, guys. Love the show.
All right. Least favorite candy is easy. It's a tie between two. Charleston chews and candy corn. That's easy right there. Charleston chews, in theory, if they were good, I could never chew them. I still probably can't. and I think they still sell them. They sell them at our local candy store. That's an, it'd always be a nice old lady would give you that, because I guess maybe that was a big thing in the, you know, in the 50s and the 40s when they were growing up, or 30s. Well, actually, in the 80s, they would have been 60.
I love a Charleston
so,
shoe.
In the 20s and 30s, it was what they ate, because I go back 30 years. Candy corn is terrible. It's shit. It's corn syrup. It gives me a headache. There's always that 1 year where I think, okay, I'm going to eat this again. I'm going to give it a chance. And then it gives me another headache, and it is awful. It is awful. It's there's nothing. It's just corn syrup. It's shit and food coloring. It's awful.
I actually don't hate candy corn as much as I think I do. Whenever I try it, I'm like, yeah, this isn't as bad as I remember it being. But I don't go out of my way to eat candy corn. My least favorite candy, Halloween candy, is any of that Palmer brand chocolate, that Mocklet shit. The fucking, it's gross. Palmer is a chocolate brand. It's the P is the rabbit head. You'll know it if you look it up.
I don't know if I had that.
Look up Palmer chocolate.
Okay.
I have a feeling you'll recognize
it. What's wrong with it?
It's like fucking wax. It's like not real chocolate. Half of it is just like sugar.
Okay. I see.
The little pumpkin coins are the big.
I see the Santa heads.
Yeah, the Santa heads and the pumpkin coins.
That chocolate is.
It's disgusting.
It's so diluted and cut with other shit.
Exactly.
You think Hershey's chocolate's cut? No, this is cut. This tastes like nothing.
It's disgusting.
It tastes like nothing. And they do the little balls with the colored balls.
It just tastes mildly sweet. It's not chocolate anymore. A letdown. It's very disgusting.
All right, thanks. When you said Palmer, what are you talking about? I pictured just the colored balls.
That is my least favorite. And there's always someone in the neighborhood who's giving those things out, and they're disgusting.
Oh, they did the coin shaped Halloween stuff. That was terrible.
Yeah, the foil pumpkins. Yes, the flat foil pumpkins.
No, those are
disgusting.
Terrible. I never knew. I didn't know there was a company that did all those consistently. That like low grade fucking chocolate.
Yeah,
like 2% chocolate.
That's them. And my favorite thing I ever went as this Halloween was the pterodactyl costume my mom made me.
You
talked about
that. Very
I've
sweet.
About it,
I love your mom. I wish I could talk to her.
She's a nice lady.
Nice lady. She's a nice lady. That's a good compliment for your mom. All right. Next year, is this how we're gonna do double Blake?
Hey Pat and Ian, Blake from Buffalo, New York here again.
Buffalo.
Question for you guys today is, what is the one or a few favorite things you guys have ever picked up at a flea market or swap meet? I know here in Buffalo we had a pretty big one called the Super Flea.
Yep.
It was an indoor and outdoor flea market.
Super Flea.
And there was always a vendor selling many games on the inside. Turns out it was the same exact one me and my brother used to rent and play from the local Blockbuster time and time again, which is pretty awesome.
That's a good one.
That is. I actually did that once. I actually sold someone a copy of one of the WCW WWF wrestling games for the N64, and it was their copy with their created wrestler still on it.
Wow.
Yeah, from when they were kids. My favorite thing I ever got from a flea market was my sadly gone. I miss it sometimes, but reality is I probably would have gotten rid of it again if I had the chance. My fiber optic World of Nintendo signed. I paid $10 for that.
That's an L, Ian. That's an L.
I sold it to someone who needed it. Did I sell it to Scott?
You did.
It was either Scott or one of Scott's friends. So I don't care. It's fine. I don't have the space for it. But yeah, that was a $10 fucking sign when I found it.
I think on principle, those cheap finds are tough to get rid of. It's like, because, wow, it's like those free, basically.
Yeah.
I always talk about my military grade night vision. One of the favorite things I ever saw, because it was like a harbinger of things to come, when I first visited here and bothered to eat in 2008, I went to the swap meet, I think before Comic-Con. That Sunday, or I forget if I went that Sunday here. And one of the first things I saw on the far row at the swap meet, I literally almost stepped over it. There was a Virtual Boy set up on the stand in the Blockbuster rental case. And like, I literally looked past it towards the fence, because it's like, I was so conditioned in Jersey not to find that stuff anymore.
Right, right.
And so literally the first swap meet I go to, I find that. And I had to have someone hold it for me here in the hopes of mailing it back, you know. So it was so strange to find that. That's one of my favorite things, because that was like the harbinger of me. Like, oh, there's always like, not that that's why I moved out here. But it didn't hurt. It didn't hurt to have an awesome
finding
flea market.
Stuff. Yeah, it
yeah,
didn't hurt.
That was my lifestyle. But I'd go out to the flea market in Jersey and, you know, you'd find little things, but not stuff like that. And like every week finding stuff like that. That's why it's one of my favorite things here.
Hey, this is Jason from Tennessee. Have either of you ever thought that newer games feel less immersive than older games? Things such as voice acting and near realistic graphics have taken away from a lot of imagination the brain has to offer. It's made me feel like I put a lot less effort into thinking about the world of the game because it's laid out for you and it takes away from some of the experience. Some examples that come to mind for me are RPG games such as Morrowind, Oblivion, vs. Skyrim, or PlayStation Final Fantasy vs. newer ones. Let me know what y'all think. Thanks.
Jason, I think you answered your question. Yeah, when a game is presented as like a movie, or it's so realistic, or it's a bunch of cutscenes, then yeah, it's doing everything for you. There's no more imagination required. You're seeing the story play out like you're watching a movie. When you watch a movie, you don't need to use your imagination. You shut it off at that point.
I agree with you 100%. Voices are the big thing for me. I've kind of alluded to that before when we talked about the bonus podcast about comics. I'm always weird about when a book or a comic gets animated or a book gets turned into a movie. I already have a voice in my head,
sure,
for these people. And then having a look and a voice attached to a book or a voice attached to a comic or a cartoon, it's never the way I picture it. With RPGs, I just got used to being able to read them at my own pace, and I kind of come up with voices. And yeah, having all of that done for me, I avoided RPGs with voice acting for the first couple of years that became a big thing. And then it just got to the point where all games had voice acting, and I just had to deal with it. But I hated it.
I agree. Like you, there's more imagination put into simpler things. Obviously, reading, you have to create the whole world in your head. But even when you're playing an 8-bit game, and there's like some semblance of a story, but it's not all thought out, and you can create it in your mind. It seems like you get wrapped up in it. At least to me, you get wrapped up in it more.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get wrapped up in hell, the fucking story, playing Ninja Gaiden and trying to avenge your father, and you got a demon you have to take down. Real quick about movies and versus books and things like that. My freshman year roommate refused to go see. He was a huge Tolkien fan. Refused to go see Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh,
for that reason, he said, yeah. No, I don't want it to ruin. Like, and I looked at him like, wow. I wonder to this day if he, because those three out of any set of movies, those three were done with probably the most amount of care to the source material that you could have imagined, and thoughtfulness and sort of quality amongst a trilogy. That's it to me. Like that was incredible that they pulled that off with all three movies like that.
Yeah, and my dad was real. My dad is a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and he was very nervous leading up to those movies. He ended up liking them.
And yeah, they changed some stuff and characters here and there. Yeah,
but he's got his issues with them, but overall, he was really impressed.
Could do a hell of a lot worse, right? Like a lot worse.
Yeah,
make Gimli a little bit too much comic relief, for example, things like that. And it's like, yeah, that's why I assume they made him a little more comic relief for my liking as a character. But yeah, I can totally see that for sure. All right, next.
Hi, guys. This is Jose from Michigan. My question today is, what is a game or genre that you keep coming back to and appreciate, even though you may be terrible at it? For me, it's shoot 'em ups, both vertical and horizontal. I am horrible at them, but have fun playing them. Also, are there any forgiving and beginner-friendly shoot 'em ups that you would recommend? Thanks for taking my question.
So before I lose my train of thought, as far as like beginner shoot 'em ups or ones that I think are a little bit easier for people to get into, Gunknack on the NES, Blazing Lasers on the TurboGrafx-16/PC Engine. I also think in terms of like slightly more modern shooters that, you know, add a lot more going onto the screen, I think Gunbird shooters are fairly forgiving and fun to learn on, so maybe try those. And then as far as games that I always go back to that I'm horrible at, fighting games. I buy just about every fighting game that comes out. I love fighting games. I'm miserable at them. I love them.
You need my stance that I did at Retropalooza. Yeah,
I love them. I don't have the hand speed, coordination, or patience for them.
But you still like trying to get through them.
I like the whole idea of fighting games.
I don't think there's a game genre that I suck at that I enjoy playing, because otherwise, I don't know. I don't want to torture myself here.
I was pretty optimistic about the Amico. I liked what Tommy was saying. I was liking what I was hearing. I was liking the sales pitch. But after looking at what's been happening since the year, holy crap. Like, it's just an absolute train wreck. It's a disaster. And yeah, I don't see a point for this console. I really don't. I really don't know how this thing is going to do well at all.
Yeah, it's interesting the words you said. I liked what I was hearing.
And that's the thing. A lot of people liked what Tommy was hearing.
Or what was saying.
Liked what was Tommy was saying. They liked what Tommy... They liked what they were hearing. Because Tommy was... But that was kind of the first thing that made my ears perk up when it was announced is he was saying too much of the right stuff. Yes. And that was never going to come to fruition.
And when you even before there was any concrete... I mean, all the plans changed. It was going to be a 2D console, the best 2D chip ever.
Yep.
They had Burger Time and all these licenses, all this stuff was lined up. And it's like, looking back, it's like, wow, all that stuff he presented at Portland back in 3 years ago, how much of that was just him just pulling shit out of his ass?
Yeah, what he promised at Portland is absolutely not what anyone's getting.
$149 to $179, games $3 to $8. That's none of that.
R-Type, Burger Time, Tron Deadly Discs.
Yeah, woo! They're all on the way. All of them are coming.
They're going to be here any
day. Best 2D chip ever.
Yep.
Better than Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft can come up with. Absolutely. Let's do a few more here.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Jeff Dickinson here from Dallas, Texas. Now, I appreciate Simon. Remember that game that was invented by Ralph Baird? It came out like right about the same time that Atari did. And to me, I believe personally that Simon is a part of video game history. Now, I'm not sure if you ever played it or haven't played it and enjoyed it and appreciate it the way I do, but I think it's part of an important level of our history of video games just because of who invented it.
That's a good point. We had it in video game years, 77.
Yeah, we did talk about it.
It's not technically a video game. It's a toy. It's an electronic game, but you know it's
well. It's from that era where I think you can count it as maybe part of. It's not exactly video games, but it's part of that early electronic game history.
Yeah.
Where I mean, back then things like the Atari, the Tommy Blip, which was electromechanical stuff like
the LED,
Simon,
the LED games.
Back then they were all kind of looked at as similar, the same thing. Now, granted, they branched off and became different things.
Sure.
Or looked at differently. But yeah, I can understand that viewpoint.
All right, let's do a couple more here.
Hey, this is Leland Judson from the Toronto area and calling behalf of the Lelanders YouTube community. Just like to say I love your guys' coverage of the Intellivision Amico. Don't always agree with your other topics, but I love how Pat's been discussing the X-Files lately. Questions for both of you. Have you ever seen a paranormal incurrence, sort of like UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, or extraterrestrials? And would you like to see another X-Files game made? I played the one for the PS1, and I thought it was a real stinker, even worse than me. Take care.
I never played the X-Files games. I remember they had like one or two computer ones.
Yeah, the PS2 one was like an interactive movie sort of deal, if I'm not mistaken.
I'd rather it be like an adventure game.
Sure.
Where you solve something as a procedural, because that's basically what the series is at its heart. It's a procedural. I have seen lots of weird stuff at my old house in New Jersey. Lots of ghosts. Lots of things. I've gone into detail before. Ian thinks I'm crazy. He thinks my whole family's mad.
Ghosts.
But no, we've seen lots of things. I have never seen what I think would have been a UFO. I've seen things in the sky that looked weird that were like, it's like, what is that? Is that a helicopter? Is that a star? Like, you see that stuff as a kid. I've never seen something like that, which is unfortunate because I was into that stuff, but I never went hunting for it either. I think stuff like that, it's like either everyone sees it. There's like events that have happened in like New York, New Jersey, I've heard about, where like, you know, back in like the 70s, where like everyone saw something, like whatever that night was.
Right.
And it's like, when I was alive, I never heard of that stuff, and nothing local like that, obviously. What about you, Ian? You know about my ghost stories. What about you? Have you seen anything that was kind of weird?
No.
Any critters? Mm-mm. Jersey Devil, Buffalo Devil.
Buffalo Devil.
The Buffalo Devil.
Just a buffalo with horns.
I want to tell one of the ghost stories. Do it.
Tell it up.
Okay. So I'll tell you the one story. I've told it in sequence before. There's like six or seven things that I've seen in my house or that other family members have seen. One of the last things I saw, by the way, whenever I went back to visit my parents' house and stayed there after I moved out and went to a garden apartment, it always still felt weird. Especially in my bedroom, because all the weird feelings were in that corner of the house. It was the back room where the furnace was, and it was that hallway outside of my door by the bathroom and my fucking room. I never got a good night's sleep for like years at one point because of that weird feeling. But anyway, So I was in the middle of moving out. So I'm 25, 26. And then I'm packing up all the clothes from my closet. It's the middle of the day. It's like a, probably like a Saturday afternoon or a Friday afternoon. Probably, now I was working, so like a Saturday afternoon. And my closet is about 3 feet from the door. It's one of those sliding doors, like, you know, on the rollers. And I'm just packing stuff up, and something weirdly told me to look outside my door. I get this weird feeling to look outside the door. And so I took like a step and a half to the left. I looked outside my door, and about 6 feet away where the hamper was. The hamper was right outside the door. So it was like about a six to seven foot hallway about, until it made a left turn and went to my parents there. It's a split level house. I saw a black form that was probably around, let's just say, 7 feet tall in the vague form of a person. It was almost like the best comparison I can tell you is like there was the old Scooby-Doo episode where like it was like a kind of a black figure ghost or something from the intro, where it's like it looked like limbs and it looked like a form and it looked like a head, but it wasn't like well sketched out. It was all like almost like parts of like someone like cutting out like a paper doll sort of thing.
Gotcha.
If that makes more sense. And it was there, and when I saw it, it like did this. It did like a little twitch. I swear to God.
Yeah.
It did like a twitch, as if I caught it. Like I wasn't supposed to see it.
You spooked the spook.
I spooked this thing. It twitched, and then it shot out of my view down the hallway where I couldn't see it. And it wasn't like a tenth of a second. It was a full second, like 1/1000. So it wasn't out of the corner of my eye. It was directly on. And then I was like, oh my, okay, I saw it. I didn't get freaked out. I said, okay, I saw it. And then I tried to think logically, okay, was it a shadow from something? Did a car pass by? And it was such a spot in the corner that there was no direct light source that could have made the shadow like, especially if it was 7 feet tall. And so I saw it. And then my mom was in the living room. I say, Mom, yeah, I just saw something. She's like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And at that point, it wasn't shocking because, like I said, it was, I saw a string of things over the couple of decades prior living there.
Right.
So it wasn't like a shock that I saw that. It was like one of us, like several things that I've talked about before that I saw, but that was the last thing I saw there. And then my parents moved out at 7-8 years ago, and you know, good luck to the people that moved in. You might see some stuff every now and then. My mom experienced glasses falling off of counters and things like that. It happened a few times, things like that. I got her a Mayan sun calendar that was on a nail, and she found it. She found it on the ground, not down on its face. On the ground against the wall, the nail's still there.
Huh.
And it's like, yeah, huh, how do you do that unless you picked it up and put it there? It would not slide off if the nail was still there. So weird stuff like that. Weird stuff like that. And besides, we saw stuff. So right, Ian's not going to call me crazy this time. Thanks, Ian. Thanks for not calling me crazy. You're like, I'll let him have his little dreams. All right, one more from a friend.
Hey, Pat, I sure hope you're happy that Intellivision's bleeding money over here, but we're going to make this right, okay? Because we got someone here who wants to say hi, don't we?
Oh, yeah, they got me all tied up back here, Pat. They jumped me right by the swap meet. Tommy got out of the car with a bunch of sweaty guys, and they threw me in the trunk. One of them wasn't even wearing a shirt, for Christ's sake.
Hey, watch your mouth, or we're going to make you play the Amico again.
Oh, God, no, anything but that. What an overpriced piece of crap.
Well, look, you're entitled to your opinion, and I'm entitled to throw this ColecoVision AC adapter at your head.
Ow.
You hear that, Pat? I'm going to do it again.
Ow.
Here's how this is going to go. You guys are going to take back everything you said about me, or you're going to see me at the swap meet selling pieces of freight. Be sure to look up the market value, too, so you can brag to everybody on Flea Market Madness about how much money you saved, you douche.
Help.
No! 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 Tommy, you've gone too far. You can say, don't touch Frank. Innocent Frank, are you kidding me?
Well, I was going to go to work after this, but now we have to go rescue Frank.
What the hell, Tommy? I demand his immediate release. I demand proof of life. I want two hairs off his great mustache. What the hell is going on? Man. Oh, this was a fun one, right?
Yeah, that was a good episode.
If you want more of this, we got us talking about burgers and pickles. You go to patreon.com/CPodcast. You can get our bonus episode for this week. We'll try to do them, you know, most weeks. Maybe not every week, but, you know, we'll keep it going. Yeah. If you like it. appreciate it. And toodaloo. Hopefully your back gets better. You
know? Yeah, we'll see about that.
Maybe an NES Punk episode. Maybe for Halloween. All right, we'll see you later.
Bye.